Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now, a very special Wednesday Night Rugby, we hope. We have on one line Ronan O'Gara. You're there, hello.
Hi, Joe. Yeah.
How you doing?
Excellent, yeah. Yourself?
Not so bad. And we also have Peter Stringer. Hello, Peter.
Evening, Joe. How are things?
Yeah, very well. Where are you in the world at the moment?
I am back in Cork at the moment. I'm the last 10 days have been self-isolating with my family. We had a new baby 2 weeks ago, so it's been a bit of a challenge with not seeing grandparents and everything. But sure, look, everyone's going through the same thing. But it's all good. Everyone's healthy, so we're spending time together, so we make the most of it.
Well, congratulations. Is that baby number one?
That's baby number two. So we've a three-year-old, nearly three. So trying to manage him as well is challenging as well.
Okay. And is that the advice if you have a newborn, self-isolating is the only way to go, or are you just making that decision?
We're making that decision. I think in terms of, I think my wife has just said, look, we don't want any visitors anyway. She was in for 5 days for a C-section. So it was quite tough in terms of managing our time in the hospital. And I wanted to get them out of there as quickly as possible because obviously, you know, the tremendous staff at CUH, but they had to make room for new cases of the virus. So it was just great to get them home and just spend a bit of time here, which has been great.
I'm sure, yeah. And is Cork home now? That's the plan.
That's the plan for the moment anyway. And look, we're family is, you know, here. My wife is from here as well. So we're just enjoying that. And look, since I finished playing, it's just been about getting home and spending time with family because we had Noah when we were in Manchester when I was with Sale Sharks. And just spending a bit of time back here just makes you appreciate what you really have. So it's all about that at the moment and spending the time with them that I can. And I can do that at this moment in time, you know.
Have you ever been to Cork, Joe? Do you know where it is, Joe?
I've heard of it.
I'm sure you have. you haven't spent much time there, though, have you?
Not enough.
No.
It's a wonderful place.
The best golf courses in the world there.
Is that right? Okay, well, I'll take your word for it. Peter, did you call the kid Ronan, or what's the plan on that?
Ronan Stringer. No. Yeah.
baby Oscar is this one. We've Noah and Oscar now, so no Raj, but I'm catching up with Roger's numbers he has at home at the moment, but I don't think I'll get to the numbers he has. Certainly, no. It's a challenge too at the moment. Is enough, I think.
It sure is. How are the Van Trapp family in La Rochelle then, Ronan? How are you getting on?
Yeah, going great, absolutely. We've been blessed with great weather, so amid all the kind of lockdown, there has been a positive week. A lot of sleeping, a lot of reading, a lot of self-reflection, a lot of how do we get better in our own little selfish world, but also where what's going on outside. But it's been dramatic in the last number of days. It's just no mixing. Get back home, get indoors. Or get outdoors if the weather is well, but stay in your premises essentially, right. Go to the shops just maybe once a week, but really is keep your own space.
Yeah, we are very much in lockdown at the moment, or as close to it as we're likely to be for some time. And is it like police on the streets kind of thing asking you, what are you doing out, or is it a bit more relaxed where you are?
No, if you go out, yeah, it's... You're entitled to kind of a 20-minute walk in the morning and then maybe the same in the evening. But I think at this stage, people have realised the severity of the disease. And people, I think, are smart enough to realise to give yourself the best opportunity not to get it. So don't mix with people.
Yeah,
it's gone that far over here.
Yeah, I think we're right behind you. So to get back to the point of this conversation, Ronan O'Gara, Peter Stringer, 16 years at Munster, we made it, two Heineken Cups, senior Ireland debut together in 2000, cradled by Mick Galway, Grand Slam in 2009, and obviously combined for the drop goal. And all of this started in Cork Con, is it, Peter? Because I saw a picture of you two looking very young, like less than 10 years old, I would have made it.
Yeah, I was around that age, but I first started in Con when I was, I suppose, 6, 7, Roger's a year older than I am, and we had a year under 8s, a year under 10s, and a year under 12s together. And that photo that's kind of been on Twitter and social media, it's been a European competition that we went to France, and Rog was a captain of the under 12s, and my brother George was actually captain of the under 11s. But it was there was obviously those years that we had together. I suppose, you know, we don't have, you know, abiding kind of too many memories of those days, but it was it was pretty special in terms of Cork Con as an underage system was phenomenal. I think in terms of us traveling to England, to Wales, to France at a very young age to experience rugby, and I suppose in terms of our partnership, it didn't really kind of happen again until Munster. We were at school together, right? But you know, you don't really cross paths, and you know, Roger's a year older, like I said, than I was. So
competition in France was was unbelievable, Joe. It was so, so good. I can remember it like yesterday. We were sponsored, I think, by Adidas. This is going back. So it was under 12s. You're going back 32 years ago. We had Adidas gear. We had a black strip and a white strip. So when we wore the black strip, it was kind of, we felt like we were nearly the All Blacks. When we were in the white kit, we were Con. They did pitches. I don't know, were they full-length pitches for under 12, but they had them lined out especially. They had padding on the posts. We were actually allowed Coke at dinner time.
It was the big time.
We massively hit the big time. It was so good. We were all packed into, six of us into the parents' cars, took the ferry. So what would have been back then? It would have been Ringaskiddy to Cherbourg or Le Havre or somewhere like that. Drove. It was like, honestly, we felt like we were Real Madrid or someone on tour. But talk about getting it right. It's a competition that would stay in our memories. Even all those guys we play, we'd probably be able to list off the team for you nearly, which is quite strange, because we all stay in contact to this day because of that kind of, it was the European under 12 championship, and it was incredible.
I presume even at that age, Peter Stringer wasn't indulging in the Coca-Cola. He was like, my body is a temple. I've got to pose in the nude in about 25 years' time. I need to be ready for it.
No, I was quite loose back then, Joe. You'd be surprised. Right. Coca-Cola and jelly beans, all right, it was a staple part of the diet. But things changed certainly over the years.
And were you always a 9 and Ronan always a 10, Peter?
Certainly, I was always a 9 in terms of when you rock up on your day one.
You stop being polite, Strings. You can say it. We had no chance of playing anywhere else, Joe. We were not.
Absolutely. That's what I mean. So I rocked up, and you're put into positions based on your size, and that was it. I was pigeonholed in there, and there was no changing me. So Rog was obviously a 10. So, look, that was the way it was, and it wasn't going to change, certainly when we got to schoolboy rugby, you know.
I saw it, and we have a picture of it. We'll throw it up, because you won the Munster School Senior Cup with Prez, and there's a team photo here, and we'll stick it up for people. They can see it there, and Declan Kidney has just been cut out of shot as well, but Ronan is front and centre holding the rugby ball, and Peter is back left, although you can't quite see him on the photo we have.
I don't know how I made it to the back row. hidden.
There's new policy since then. You get the small fellas up the front, and then the big guys go on the back row.
In terms of Munster, so your debut, Rog, was 97 against Connacht. David Wallace made his debut, I was reading today, on the same day. And then Peter Stringer, you made your debut against Ulster in 98. Ronan, from memory, were you two fairly well thought of and this was the future 9 and 10? Or was one of you maybe more destined to make it and the other they weren't so sure about? What was your memory of you and Peter and your chances of making it professionally when you were just kind of 95, 96 and into 97?
Oh, geez, my gut reaction straight out, which you'd be kind of looking after yourself, Joe, and the fact that it was so hard to try and make it even at that stage. You didn't know where it was going. Obviously, you weren't talking about two big specimens, so you weren't talking about any combination even at that stage. But there was obviously a really good understanding from a very young age. But starting off, it was like, such a different sport back then that it was more not looking at a halfback partnership. It was, you know, from my point of view, anyway, it was kind of just how can I try and make an imprint on whoever is coaching this team? Really selfish, but that's the way a lot of us were.
Yes. Peter, did you feel you had a good chance to make it, or were you struggling all the way through until your debut in 98?
I left school in 96, and like Rog said, we just didn't know the way the game was going to go, and it was all very much trial and error, and I was in college, you know, studying chemistry, and it was the last thing I wanted to do and the last place I wanted to be. And, you know, I played Ireland schools, and I come off the back of a successful trip to Australia, and you're in the Munster training squad then. And my first season, I don't think I would have played much with Rog. I think we were injured, Rog, maybe a hamstring injury that kind of first season I came on in 99. Barry Everett was my kind of 10 that I first started with. But, as Rog said, you're focused on your own game. And for me, there was a World Cup in 99, and I had a string of scrum halves at Munster. There was Brian O'Mara, there was Tom Tierney, Steve McIver, all capped international scrum halves of really, really good quality at the time. And, you know, I came in as kind of probably fourth, fifth choice into a Munster setup. And there was a World Cup in 99. O'Mara and Tierney were away at a World Cup, and I had an opportunity then to play and to stake a claim for a starting spot. So, you know, that was my opportunity. And when the lads came back from the World Cup, you know, I put in a bit of work and put in some performances that, you know, Declan and the coaching staff, you know, saw fit to keep me in position there. So, you know, like I said, it's these opportunities that come up, and you're only concerned about really yourself at that age, because, you know, the whole game was thrown up in the air, and all of a sudden we were, you know, training, you know, every single day. And it was just a surreal experience to be on that journey.
Ronan, pretty quickly you do form a partnership at Munster and then even at Ireland. Tell us about the on-field partnership, how it worked. Was there much talk? Who was calling the shots? Did you talk much about it in advance of games? Give us a sense of, once you got up and running together as a partnership and playing week in, week out, or pretty close to it, how did the Stringer-O'Gara thing tend to work?
Yeah, well, it's kind of easy, I suppose, when you're 16 years in the bank and you take so much for granted, Joe, that it would be such an error not to, I suppose, investigate the amount of hours that went into building a relationship. We took so much for granted, or people took so much for granted, but like, so much goes into training and figuring each other out. And then you get an idea of, for example, if I'm exiting, Strings knows exactly where I want the ball. Little things like that make a huge difference. So if I'm kicking to a left touchline, for example, and he puts the ball on my left foot, I've got a kick to a left touchline with a left foot, killer. But if he can actually hit me midline, then I can step with the pass and clear my line. So I think it was a really, really interesting relationship, in the fact that I think the minute we probably hit the dressing room, zero chat. But the minute we hit the pitch, it just kind of, it really worked. But for a relationship, you know what I mean, you spend as much time with Strings as you do with your girlfriend or your missus, because that's what it was back then, because it was a Munster family, and that's overused, but that's exactly, we actually loved going to training, loved playing the games. But like, behind all the games, there's another 16 hours a week of training that happens. So it was very, very natural, Joe, is probably what I'm trying to come around to saying. It was a very natural and relationship that happened, because Strings, I think, gets rugby. And once you have that, I think, you know, what he had was, he had an unbelievable pass, and he had a great management of his forwards. So he knew exactly, once we got on the front foot, there are times when the forwards ate the head off him for taking the ball out, but there was also an unbelievably cranky bollocks outside him and me. So that's essentially how it worked, and he had such great patience.
I think that was it, Raj. Couldn't cross you. Just that whole, I suppose, willingness and want to get the best out of each other in terms of a team that we were playing with at the time. So for me, it was about demanding the best possible ball that I can get from whoever it may be, Golov, Paulie, Dunica, whoever it may be. If the ball that wasn't delivered accurately off the top of a line out, if I'm passing from right to left, if the ball wasn't on my shoulder, in that kind of sweeping movement off a line out, that they would get it from me. And likewise, you know, you demanded quality ball from me every single time, and the guys outside you demanded it from you. So it was that knock-on effect that brought the best out of us. So whether in a game or whether it's in training, and like you said there, that the forwards, you know, I had to learn to boss these guys. When I first came into the game, you had the likes of Claw and Golov and Axel and Eddie Halvey and all of these fellas. I had to dominate coming out of UCC, a quiet kind of small fella that, you know, I had to find a voice in myself and to boss these guys around the place. And on the flip side of that, then with Rog demanding kind of quality from me, it just had a huge knock-on effect right throughout the squad and enabled us to have that kind of quality week in, week out.
And Peter, was there much talk between you and Ronan on the pitch across an 80 minutes?
There would have been bits of chat, yeah, certainly. Look, there would have been a bollocking from Rog every so often when if the pass wasn't kind of perfect, and that was good. That's what you'd want from fellas. You know, we had our signals, you know, off a line out. If he wanted the ball off the top, he'd give a signal like this. If it was a down and give like that, or if it was a drive, he'd give a kind of a closed fist. So we had all these little signals, these little intricacies that we were able to kind of communicate. But it was all about kind of quick ball again, that I knew instinctively on the back of really quick ruck ball that I knew where Rog would want to be. And I'd put it flat on the line that I knew that he'd like to take it really, really flat. And then likewise for drop goals, we had certain calls that instinctively I knew where he was going to be. So, you know, like Rod said, if you know you spend that amount of time with somebody, you know, you're going to pick up this. And it became that kind of nearly like, I suppose,
telepathic. We hear you.
Telepathic, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, you know, it looked that way when you two were humming. You know, whenever the peak was, whatever year it was, there was the telepathic element.
I think it's important too, as well, Joe, for younger kids listening, maybe, the fact that behind all the rosy days, there was hard days as well. You know, something that I'm kind of very proud about or happy with the values or the respect we had for each other. Yes, I was an asshole at training at times, and the fact that, like, I can remember movements unopposed. If Strings didn't throw the ball where I wanted it, I'd catch the ball and I'd chuck it back at him. Like, imagine doing that. But I think we had that kind of a team where we wanted to be better than everyone else. And it was most definitely that Munster team. You think about it, 2009, I think, was it? 9 people picked to go on a Lions tour before one got suspended and I think one got injured, you know? So,
yeah.
It's not my opinion. This is a factually correct thing that we had pushed standards where they'd never been before. But that was, I think, in fairness to Decky, probably due to the environment he created about getting the best out of each other. And that was more so players pushing each other as well as the staff too, because it wouldn't be right for me not to mention the staff.
No, of course, absolutely. Peter, was Ronan, this isn't a joke question, by the way, was Ronan's crankiness ever an issue?
Yeah, always. Not in a bad way. Like, there were times, obviously, you know, you're annoyed with each other, and I'd be annoyed with other fellas, and like, but again, you can't dwell on little moments. You know, if I threw a bad pass, I'd know myself, and you kind of have that feeling within that you don't need somebody else to tell you about it. You know, that kind of way, and that's we're our own kind of biggest critics right throughout our career, and. You know, at times when in that moment when you know you've kind of messed up and you haven't, I suppose, lived up to the standards you've set for yourself, the last thing you kind of want to hear is someone in your ear telling you the same thing. But look, that's part of it. That's human nature. You know, rugby, you're in an environment that, you know, people become cranky, but, you know, you forget about it. Like you knock a ball on, forget about it. Because
I think we had a great policy, though, in terms of we left it on the pitch, Joe. So we had a kiss and make up policy in Munster. So as heated as it got, and there would be plenty of digging matches and the training, but there would always be a final huddle. So basically one of the main leaders would speak. And after that, then it was kind of, at times it was kind of, we'll kiss and make up. So some days there would be no one, obviously, that had to kiss and make up. Some days you could have 6 couples having a kiss. But then it was literally, you know, it wasn't a peck or with the coronavirus now everything will change. But it was actually it was a kiss on the lips, which was quite interesting and awkward.
You were kissing a lot.
There was a cue for you, was there?
But I think that is so important too, that it's left on the pitch.
Yeah.
Or the times I got ultra ratty, I probably like to think strings, and you hopefully will say this, that I'd send a text and go, can we meet or have a coffee about this? Because I'm sure there'll be further Stewart's inquiry into this performance.
You respect the guy for... You know how much it means to somebody, and like it'd be worse if someone laughs it off. And I've been in environments in my latter stages of my career where I've been in environments and it's annoyed me that people have just kind of laughed things off if passes aren't accurate. You know, you know how much it means to someone when they react in that way, and that's what really was special about the group that we had. And you know, obviously, you know, you could see how much it meant to Raj and the way he was. He just wanted the best out of everybody around him.
Mm. A Grand Slam game, Wales 2009, Peter. So you're over the ball. You presumably know exactly where Ronan wants the ball. Talk us through it from there.
Yeah, it's I suppose for the whole game, I'm sitting on the bench really, and I come on, you know, to 15, 20 minutes to go, and you're in an environment, and I suppose I've come off the bench in quite a bit in towards the end of my career, and it's a different dynamic. You know, if it's kind of during the season, you're thinking, okay, I got to make an impact. I got to try and get a pass in. I got to get a kick in. I got to try and get a little bit of a break in. I got to try and show somebody something that gets me picked for the next week. This was a different dynamic. You're in a big game, high pressure situation. It's as big as it gets. So you're thinking to yourself, okay, it's got to be about composure. It's got to be about doing the right things for the team. And my whole mindset completely changed, and understanding, obviously, we'd been in that position before in Cardiff and a few years previous with that game where there was one drop goal and Raj got another one, and we beat Wales as well. But this was about just delivering one pass in a pressure situation, something that I had hit Raj with a ball, I don't know how many times in my career, but this had to be on the money. And again, like Raj mentioned, the key point for me was getting Raj, getting that ball on the right-hand side of his body. And like looking at the drop goal in recent times, you probably look at it, it's probably a fraction high if I'm kind of being over critical about it. But I think the main point was that the ball hit him on the right-hand side and he didn't have to shift it over from his left to his right because of the Welsh guys coming off the line. But it was a case where I nearly hit Paulie with the ball when he nearly got in the way, and he was a little bit apologetic about it, that's the last fella you want to hit in a drop goal scenario, but waited for him to get out of the way, hit Raj, and credit to him again, stepped up to the mark and just nailed it.
And were you, I generally, when you're in kind of continuous motion, nerves don't really attack you, but I guess you had a time was probably slowed down, you would have had a second over that ball where you're looking back at Ronan. Did you feel nervous in that moment or were you fairly okay?
No, you don't. Joe, to be honest, you don't have time to think about it in these situations. You're so familiar in your surroundings because of what you've done before and your time kind of on a pitch or standing over a ball. I've been doing it since I was 6 years of age. So it's not a case where you're kind of panicking. Mm. You know, I've thrown that pass a million times. Yes, it's a pressure situation, but you don't have time to think about it, you know. But there was no panic in that moment. You know, there was no, you know, the Welsh defence weren't going to get off the line.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that the ball was still in the ruck. So I had that kind of second. I had that kind of time to get Paulie out of the way, get Flo out of the way, I think it was, and just get that kind of, that moment to make sure that the ball was on the money.
Rory Best, yeah.
Oh, Rory, so yeah.
Was it a touch high, Ronan, or has he been hurting himself? I think a touch high.
No, I think the only thing with that, like you always say to your nine, and he'd have heard this a million times to me, I want my hands stinging. So every time I get a pass from you, I need my hands burning. I don't want any of this soft stuff landing in my hands. So you hit me, rip it at me every single time. So if it's too hard, you'll hear from me. If not, keep them coming. So basically, right. He knew exactly. But no, it was the fact that they were in a sprint start. That was the only thing that spooked me potentially, but it was just a case of getting the ball down and the drop was poor, obviously. That's why it wobbled over. But
so as a 10, what you wanted from Peter Stringer for the purpose of this conversation was, you know, time and space. You've talked about that before, is all important. So you wanted him to buy you as much time as possible with how quickly he got to the ball and how quickly he fired it to you.
But I think with this too, with the way the clock was, there's no surprise element.
I mean generally, not just in that moment, just generally.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. What you want is speed of pass and tempo and to buy you seconds.
Yeah, and obviously, like I think, you know, if you look back and some of the tries Munster scored going back to 2000, there's a perception of it's a 10-man game. I think the analysts out there would contradict you in that and pull you up and say that we actually played flat and we played hard on the line and we played a kind of 15-man game a lot. I think that was the beauty of that team. The game management was exceptional at times because you had a mixture of play of keeping a tight up front. You could play a 10-man or you could play a 15-man. So that's, I think, the something that I so admire or take from playing in the AIL. Just that learning ground was absolutely so beneficial to me as a young player, and I think that any young player that got that, because all that team basically came from the AIL.
Ronan, the game changed a lot obviously over your time together. Did your partnership have to change with it?
Yeah, I think it did. Of course, you have to be constantly adapting your game. For defences, you get analysed, you have particular traits about yourselves, about your the combination as well. So a lot of, as you say, it has changed upside down from the time we started to when we finished. So you have to keep kind of evolving and adapting. But also, I think what some people maybe underestimate, I think in good players, and it's a good message for the younger players, like when the real pressure comes on or you're under the pump, what do you go back to? So for Strings, it was his pass. For me, it was probably a spiral kick. But a lot of players nowadays are good at a lot of things, but what are they exceptional at?
That's a point, you know, that I always kind of say that, look, you get analysed right throughout your career. And as we were on the scene, you know, the first couple of years was all kind of rosy. And for me, it was always, you know, you get that criticism, you get that kind of critique about not making a break and having kind of other elements to your game. You try and develop that over the years, obviously. But for me, I understood what I was good at and the effect and the value that it added to a team and my reading of a game as well as my pass. And that's what I worked unbelievably hard at to ensure that I was the best at it. And that's what I was good at. And I take no, criticism from anybody to say otherwise, that I worked extremely hard and made sure that I was the best because, yeah, look, you obviously always work on your weaknesses, but I knew what my strength was and I made sure that, you know, that I could perfect it as best I could. So, you know, like Rog said, that our game had to develop and expand the way the game has gone in recent years. But on the back of an unbelievably good forward pack, it delivered us really good ball. It gave me quality ball, and I was able to give that to Rog. And we had unbelievable wingers, John Kelly, Anthony Horgan, guys who could finish tries, which were, you know, they were incredible. You know, really, the rate of scores that they got on the wings as a result of the number one, you know, right through to 15 was a mark of the work that we put in.
Ronan mentioned that, you know, on the pitch, this lovely innate understanding, Peter, and then maybe back in the dressing room, not as much chat, and sport and offices and the world is littered with people who work together really well and then don't necessarily have to be world's best friends necessarily off the pitch. But would you two ever talk about rugby together and how you were going to approach games, or was there never much need for that?
There was a need, but I think it was different when with Munster you're with each other day to day, and you go home. And I'm a relatively a quiet person. I go home to my family, and I wouldn't be one for hanging out kind of with the lads kind of after training so much. And it's different when you're in Irish camp. You're there and you're in an environment, and you're there to learn, and you're there for a condensed period of time, and there's a great ability there for you to pick each other's brains. But I think with that kind of Munster setup, because you're on the field and you're with each other every single day, the way we were in that Cork setup, because you know, it was split Cork and Limerick, obviously, at the time, and probably, you know, there was need for, say, I was working with Axel in terms of an 8-9 combination on the back of a scrum. I'd have to put in a little bit more time kind of with him or after training or give him a call about something. And, you know, when you're with Rog kind of every single day, if you're kind of doing a weight session, we might have a skills bit of passing beforehand. But, you know, you're always chatting. But I think in terms of when you're away from the game with the way it had gone, it was such an intense environment that, you know, you just want to get away from it at times.
Mm. Yeah, I can appreciate that. And I guess, Ronan, you were then, after training or after weights, you were probably worrying about your kicking as much as anything.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Joe. You know, that was a bit of a memory, finishing up and the dressing room empty. So you nearly got to the stage where you'd even shower at home. It got that kind of, I suppose, that's your job. That's what you're expected to do. You got to put in the extra hours after training. But especially in the latter years, you're finishing up in CIT and everyone is gone. It's not as glamorous as you think, but that's what you love and that's what you do.
Mm. Was there a big difference between what you would do for Ireland and what you do for Munster, Ronan, or was it pretty much, you know, we can take the Munster understanding and just it was pretty seamless when it went to the green jersey?
Yeah, I think, as you said too, probably the depth of analysis was nowhere near where it is in the modern game, I suppose, now. So, but it happened quite early, I suppose, for Ireland. Yeah. For the both of us as well. So it kind of, everything just snowballed. And once you're on that roller coaster, Joe, you just keep going for as long as you can. You keep trying to get better. And that was the mindset. We were bloody lucky to be with two unbelievable teams. And I suppose, looking back at a little bit of footage, just the atmospheres that you played in as well, it was very, very evident, I suppose, the impact the crowd had on both teams.
Mm.
Those atmospheres will stay with me for a long, long time. I was just looking at some images before it came on tonight, and it's powerful stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. The image that we grabbed as well, the other famous one, is the Irish debut in 2000, and Mick Galway with one of ye either side of him. He says these days to make himself look taller.
That actually wasn't our debut.
Oh, wasn't it?
That was actually against Italy.
I thought it was the Scotland game.
No, it was actually Italy. Right. The headline was Goodfellas. It was just, sorry to kill your buzz there now, Joe. But that was the following week, but it was, there were some nervous moments, all right, those couple of weeks.
I'd say they were, yeah.
Gonna be some man for spotting an opportunity. That looks like a stage too.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, you look at I know from looking at that picture, that there's no blood in my face. You're absolutely white as a ghost, drained. Full of doubt, full of anxiety. But that was probably the day that gave me a belief anyway that I was able to kick at international level. Up to that, you wouldn't have thought it.
Yeah.
But I think that was the day that it's great to have an Italian team in the Six Nations.
God, it is a mad thing, though, to think that you go from that under-12 tournament in Europe and going over and having the Coca-Cola at dinner, and then there you are, Six Nations, next to Mick Galway, two of you still beside each other. I mean, it is kind of insane, the journey that you took parallel to each other all along the way.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
It is part of the journey. And like we spoke about it earlier, that you're probably, in your own mind, you're kind of not thinking about that kind of combination of the guys with you. You're focused on your job, and that's you know, what you have to do. I had a few ropey passes in that game, and you know, that kind of stays with me. But you know, knowing that, I suppose you take comfort from the fact in those moments when things aren't going well, that you know, you've got that familiarity around you, but you're not necessarily thinking, okay, you know, Roger's there with me, you know, sure, the whole way up from under-12s. You're with kind of, you know, Hayes, you're with Golliff, whoever it may be, but you're focused so much on what you need to do as an individual. But again, like I said, in those moments when things don't go well, it's great to have that kind of focus behind you, where you, when you've got the guys that you've kind of grown up with and played alongside in a Munster team that went so well.
It's like a comfort blanket of sorts. By the way, you've mentioned here, Peter, bad passes about 20 times in this conversation. I mean, I don't remember. I feel like you threw about 10 bad passes in your whole career, and it's like all you've done, according to this. There's a perfectionist in you clearly as well.
It does great on me. And I, do you know what? There's one thing that... We were lost to Toulouse in Toulouse. I can't remember the year. Was it 2003, a semi-final? And I took the ball out of a maul, I think, just too early, and I hit Raj with a drop goal attempt in the last couple of seconds. And I just kind of still think about it, that, you know, these little moments that kind of that do great on you, that are they're inside in your head, that you wish you could kind of get back, but. It's just, I suppose, being in a professional environment that you want to get the best out of yourself every single time, you know. And that's really, I think, we were so lucky to be in a team that we had so many great characters and guys who had that kind of will and a want to be perfectionists, to get the best out of each other. And that's ultimately what made us a successful team, you know.
Yeah,
I think the timing too of the debut was critical. I think I made my debut for Munster in 97, capped for Ireland in 2000. But like those 2.5 years, the acceleration by, I think, the experienced players in Munster has made it very, very easy for us. I was kind of Killian Keane, who would have been obviously the first choice out half, I was trying to replace there, but he was always really friendly and always good for a word. He understood what's best for the team. I think he was decent enough to kind of, as a competitor, wanting to hang on for as long as he can, but hopefully saying that this guy can do a good job for the team. So he was very generous with his information. You fellas like Dominic Crotty, but also up front, you know, if you weren't, like as Peter said, for the first 18 months in that dressing room, I was a 10, I was meant to be running the team. I would say in the dressing room, you didn't speak. You were just kind of like, oh, am I all right to get changed here? And will my clothes be here when I come back? Then once you start proving yourself, and there's a great saying about AHS, above his station. Once you're not above your station, everything was good in Munster. And once you have that respect, and I think that dignity for your teammates, it really started early, but it was such a... Jesus, I'd love to get into the car and drive to Thomond Park in the morning to play with them again.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. There's a few texts in. Joe, of the many brilliant things Rog did for Irish rugby on the pitch, I think his greatest was off the pitch when he was interviewed post-game and he said, people say the English clubs are better than the Irish. I don't believe that. It was groundbreaking at the time, kick-started a change of belief and showed a growing confidence. Also, Strings and Rog, the best ever Irish halfback partnership, says Greg and Wicklow. The Walkinstown Beckenbauer was in touch. Joe, great interview with the lads. As an ex-Defence Forces member, with what's going on in the country, great to hear two lads in the trenches together. I hope listeners will take the positivity from it. And then most importantly, Joe, will you not ask the lads, did they win that under-12 tournament in Europe? Well, that is the key question.
There's a bear shit in the woods, Joe.
You started early. Listen, great stuff. Thanks so much for taking the time to do that. Peter, I guess, batten down the hatches. You've got to nighttime feeds and nappies and all that stuff for the next while.
Absolutely, Joe. And I wouldn't have it any other way. It's amazing. And, you know, I suppose it's a time where we're at home and we got to make the most of it. And like I said earlier, it's about the family now at this stage. So, look, it's all good.
Good man. And Ronan, thank you. Thanks for taking us down memory lane. Evening.
Yeah, it's great. It's a nice new venture on OTBPN. So looking forward to next week.
All right, good man. Thanks very much. Ronan O'Gara, Peter Stringer, we'll see you. Good luck.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.